KWPC Newsline at 563-263-2442 or send us an email to mail@voiceofmuscatine.com. First with news, KWPC, AM 860, FM 95.1.
Good morning, and welcome to God Talk with Dr. Hal Green. You can listen to Dr. Green each Sunday morning here on KWPC between 8:30 and 9 for interesting discussions about God. And now, here's Dr. Green.
Good morning. Well, this is a special morning in the church calendar. This is Palm Sunday. If we could call it a celebration of Jesus' short-lived, triumphal entrance into Jerusalem to begin what's called the Passion Week. Mark's gospel, which is believed to be the earliest gospel, was called a passion narrative with an extended introduction by one famous scholar. In other words, it's sort of like stuff that preceded Jesus entering into Jerusalem, however great the teaching was, however wonderful the miracles were. This is really where the rubber and the pavement meet. This is the heart of Mark's Gospels. There really is no more dramatic or significant a week in human history, really, than this final week, the Passion Week, in the life of Jesus of Nazareth. Theories and interpretations as to what exactly happened continue to abound. Just last week, I saw another characterization of the final week of Jesus on National Public Television. It offered really a bizarre political plot, focusing more on the emperors and the stuff going on in Rome than what was happening in Jerusalem. It went to extremes without even really dealing with the religious significance of the events for both Judaism and Christianity. It seemed to reduce Jesus to a mere man who was aimed simply at toppling the religious establishment of his day. Toward what end was actually never even made clear. All such attempts will end in failure and be relegated to something we just want to forget. Well, after having studied, taught, prayed, preached about Jesus' final week for more than 30 years, even writing a play in 2003 called The Passion of the Christ, which I produced and directed at my former church here in Muscatine, Wesley United Methodist Church, I have a particular viewpoint as to what really went down. And I want to explore that with you this morning. Am I saying this is the way it actually happened? Well, possibly. As you will see, I have, I think, a really possibly good explanation for why Judas Iscariot betrayed Jesus. One of the great questions. Why did he do it? And then commit suicide on finding out or witnessing or whatever Jesus actually being crucified. Well, I'm going to give you an explanation that makes sense psychologically, politically, and theologically. Okay, I've got a lot to cover and so little time. So I'm going to start by filling you in, however briefly, and I don't know what you know about this final week. I want to start by talking about what was going on in Palestine, in Israel, and in Jerusalem in those days. It was kind of like the United States, I'm sorry to say, you know, with so many splits, Republican, Democrat, the right, the left, the center, the yeas and the nays, and the same thing was true in Jesus' day. There were four primary factions. Four. And first of all, you need to understand that Israel in Jesus' day was oppressed by the foreign invaders of Rome, the Roman soldiers. They were heavily taxed, overtaxed. They detested having the Roman soldiers. just suck out so much of their livelihood. Now, these four major factions in the country, I want to mention what they are. There were just not unanimity. It was a very fluid time, and there was a tremendous belief in Jesus' day that the Messiah was going to come. The Messiah. Finally, and what was the Messiah going to do, my friends, according to the prophecies of the Hebrew Bible? There were two major lines of prophecy that set up expectations that were very active in Jesus' day. First, the Messiah was to be the son of David. That is to say, he would be a political figure who would reestablish the Davidic monarchy so that Israel would once again have integrity, as we in the United States have integrity as its own nation. Secondly, and this happened over a period of hundreds of years, there's the apocalyptic figure called the Son of Man, who is supposed to come with an army of angels to end history as we know it. So there'd be a general resurrection and a judgment, and then the eradication of evil. Boy, would that be great today. Eradication of evil and the coming of the kingdom of God in paradise. And just wonderful stuff. And over a couple of hundred years, the Son of Man and the Son of David basically became the same figure. So there was tremendous expectation. There were false messiahs right and left, people saying, I'm the guy, you know, and most, of course, would not believe them. But in that context, a fluid context, let me tell you what the four major players, the factions were, so you get an idea. First, there were and they're not listed in order of importance, there were the Pharisees. The Pharisees, or the scribes, it means the same thing, they were the teachers of the Torah, the law, the 613 commandments of the first five books of Moses, the Torah, and also of what came to be called the oral law, the belief, according to the Pharisees, was that Moses gave both a written Torah and also a verbal one to his followers. The Pharisees were very popular with the people, although some of them were hypocrites, which you find in all religions, you find hypocrites, people who don't do what they say. Anyway, and after the temple was destroyed in 70 AD, and the people were deported, the Pharisees, if I have time, I'll tell you that story, they got out. They went to Jamna on the coast of the Mediterranean and established the first rabbinic school. So that rabbinic Judaism, that's held place in the four, this is the nature of Judaism, even with the various aspects of Judaism, since that period of time, since the school, first rabbinic school. Rabbi means teacher, and of course there were rabbis in Jesus' own time, and Jesus himself was called a teacher or a rabbi. But they were the people who taught the people the do's and the don'ts of the mitzvot, the commandments of God, do this, don't do that. And the destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem and the deportation of the people meant that from 70 AD until 1946, the Balfour Declaration after World War II, that the Jews were a people without a homeland. Pharisees. Jesus agreed with them at some points, and Jesus disagreed with them at other points. Secondly, were the Sadducees. The Sadducees were the priests, the aristocracy, and those in charge of the temple. So you had, you know, the Pharisees teaching the law, but then you had the temple and the whole context of sacrifice, that you were supposed to do this and do that in order to get right with God. Go to the temple. So in Passover, there'd be thousands of Jews streaming in from all over the world, and they would put whatever money they could afford to make sacrifices to get right with God, to receive forgiveness, etc., etc. And these are the ones that Jesus, we'll get to shortly, took on directly, took them on. When he came to Jerusalem, one of the first things he did was to go to the temple, the Davidic temple, and toss the tables and of the money changers, you know, and they were not fair. I mean, they would rip people off how much it costs for a pigeon or whatever it is to have a sacrifice, depending on how much you could afford. And he just ripped them all apart with a had a whip and so forth and said, "This is my Father's house. It's a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves." Basically shutting down the Sadducees, shutting down the temple for much of that week. And for whatever reason, it's always debated, the temple guards stood there and watched. Nobody dared to stop Jesus. Why that was, we can debate that forever. So that was the second group, and this is the group who ultimately got Jesus killed, because he took them on. You know, you take the powers that be on, and they're going to bite back. Third was a group that was not really known about until 1946, when we discovered the Dead Sea Scrolls. These were the Essenes. The Essenes, we don't know their numbers, but they were significant. They often wore white. They believed in the imminent end of the world, that the Messiah, the Son of David, the Son of Man, was about to come along with the predicted army of angels and be the end of history and the general resurrection and the judgment. And wow. So they mostly kept to themselves, most living in a kind of a monastic existence, often not marrying but remaining celibate in preparation, getting ready for the end times. Fourth, you have the Zealots. These were individuals who wanted to overthrow violently the occupying Roman army. They wanted to take arms and destroy the enemy. Four factions. So when Jesus first appears, my friends, right in the beginning of the first gospel, Mark, right after he's baptized by John the Baptist and receives the Holy Spirit and goes through the temptations, I think it's first chapter of Mark, like verse 15 or something, Jesus announces, "The time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God is at hand. Repent and believe the gospel." Every Jew would know exactly, or think they knew exactly, what he was saying. Okay, folks, light the light. This is it. You know? So in the beginning, it appeared as if Jesus was going to fulfill in his lifetime both being the Son of David and the Son of Man. He didn't talk about his death right away, that he was going to go to Jerusalem to die. Wow. What changed, you know, the question, what did Jesus know and when did he know it? It's been my experience that God does not let us know something until it's time. Nothing before it's time. So it's possible that one of the times that Jesus prayed, and he prayed all the time, God said, "Well, Jesus, it's not going to turn out the way you thought. No, there's a different agenda. There's a different agenda. I'll get to that agenda right after we check the weather."
Jamming as much variety into your workday as possible. This is AM 860, FM 95.1, KWPC.
Hi, this is Sylvan Reed. I've been working on cars for 29 years around Muscatine. Come see us at Uptown Motor Service Department. Full parts and service for working people on a budget. Remember, Uptown Motor Service Department. Call us today to keep your car running down the road.
Here's a look at your forecast from the KWPC AM 860 and FM 95.1 Weather Center. Cloudy skies expected today with daytime highs approaching 77. Southerly winds 15 to 20 miles an hour. Chance for scattered thunderstorms tonight. Lows level off around 58. Cloudy skies. A blend of clouds and sun tomorrow. Chance for scattered thunderstorms. Highs around 68. I'm Weather Eye meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 64 degrees.
This is your radio station for music, news, and information. KWPC, Muscatine, AM 860, FM 95.1.
I forgot to put in my... Okay, we're back now. Here we go. Let me emphasize as strongly as I can that there were absolutely no expectations that the Messiah would die. No, you had the Son of David, you had the Son of Man. These are going to be triumphant figures, not a dying Messiah. And so this would become what was called a scandal of the cross. That was the hardest thing to overcome. The Messiah is not supposed to die, but Jesus was looking at something else. We'll get to that. So we know from this vantage point what happened, but we got to plug in how they understood what was going on and the cast of characters. Wow. Briefly. Okay, obviously Jesus of Nazareth, and what did he know and when did he know about his coming death? In Luke's gospel, when he turns and, okay, it's time to go to Jerusalem, that's when he unloads and let his disciples know, no, I'm going to die. And Peter especially, no, Lord, you can't die. Jesus, get behind me, Satan, you know, you don't know what's going on. And then there's Peter, his right-hand disciple. Why did he deny Jesus? Why? Because he couldn't believe the Messiah. Jesus was the Messiah. They knew that he was going to die. He's not supposed to die. Then Judas Iscariot. Why did he betray Jesus? What I want to say now is that I believe that Judas was a zealot. He wanted to overthrow the Romans, and that he believed that Jesus was the Messiah, okay? And folks, this is the fulcrum, the most important point almost that I'm going to make, is that Judas, tried to force God's hand by getting Jesus arrested. Let me say that again. Because this is true, and I'm speaking as a Jew myself, in Jewish history there have been times that there was a belief that so-and-so was the Messiah, and they attempted to force God's hand to bring in the army of angels and actually bring about the end times. Okay? Especially, don't forget, there's no expectation that Jesus is going to die. Oh, no. So they're trying to force God's hand. This happened the next time, after a major thing, after Jesus and the Bar Kokhba War of 164 A.D., led by not just Bar Kokhba, who was believed to be the Messiah, but one of the greatest rabbis in Jewish history, Rabbi Akiba, who believed, okay, you know, we're going to attack the Roman army, and then the army of angels are going to come, and we're going to be victorious. Well, guess what happened? They were all crucified. So, Judas very likely believed that if he would get Jesus arrested, that there would be no choice. God would have to finally bring about the end of history, bring in the army of angels, because Jesus couldn't die, right? He's the Messiah. And when, because Judas didn't want the 30 pieces of silver. In fact, he threw it back at them when Jesus was arrested and killed himself, either right before or during or after Jesus' crucifixion. Why? Because it wasn't supposed to end that way. How could it happen? Then you have Pontius Pilate, who was the Roman prefect of the province of Judea. He was the guy who had the authority to actually kill Jesus after the Sadducees and the Sanhedrin, who were the ruling court directed by the Sadducees, finally arrested Jesus and had a charge of blasphemy, which means they got him to admit he was the Son of Man. So it was like blasphemy, meaning he's claiming that he's godlike. Pilate did not want to kill Jesus. In all three Gospels and the Gospel of John, if we get time to talk about it, Pilate wants to release him. Why? Why did Pilate, who was not a nice guy from what we've learned from other sources, why was he so nice to Jesus? In Matthew's Gospel, the 27th chapter, verse 19, right during the trial, Pilate gets word that his wife, Claudia, who may have been a disciple, but at least was a Jesus sympathizer, said basically, honey, I don't feel good about this. You got to be cool. This is not good, man. This is so. Maybe he listened to her and realized, okay, I don't want to kill this guy. Then you had Herod Antipas, who was the tetrarch, the little ruler of Galilee in that region. So at one point, Pontius Pilate said, okay, I take him over to Herod after he's arrested. Herod doesn't want to kill him either. Herod wants to see him do tricks, you know, do some miracles. I've heard a lot about you, Jesus. And then you have Caiaphas, who's the chief priest, and his father-in-law, Annas. They are the ones who really wanted to kill Jesus because they saw him as a threat to the temple worship, to the whole sacrificial cultus. So they put this claim of blasphemy on him. Then you had the Sanhedrin, which was the assembly or council from 23 to 71 men who were the final judges for the Jews. I'm sorry I'm going so fast, but I guess there's limited time, and if you know something about the story, it'll be easier. Okay, so what happens is after Jesus is arrested, before he's arrested, he knows he's going to be arrested. It's Passover, the Thursday night. We get Maundy Thursday, his last evening with his disciples, where he institutes what we call the Lord's Supper, right? And he's taking a part of the ceremony of Passover with the bread and the wine and saying, this is my body broken for you. And the blood, this is my blood offered for you. For the forgiveness of sins is a new covenant in my blood. It's so powerful and holy. And interestingly, in John's gospel, rather than the institution of the Lord's Supper, there's the institution of foot washing. Here Jesus washes his feet to show he is a servant, and the greatest among us are servants, and his disciples, who are not greater than he is, the servants are not greater than the master, must be like him and wash feet to be servants to humanity. Okay, so there's this beautiful, incredible evening, and Judas runs out because Jesus knows what he's going to do. Someone's got to get him arrested, folks. Otherwise, how is he going to die? And after that, then they go to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Jesus, it's very painful. He almost sweats blood. I think it's in Mark's gospel when he goes and he prays to the Father, Father, let this pass by my lips. I don't want this. And then that incredible statement that I suppose all of us should hang our own hats on as believers. Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will be done. Wow. So he yields. He knows what's going to happen. Whatever's happened. And anyway, then the soldiers come and Judas kisses him, and Jesus says to Judas, you betray me with a kiss. Ah, final twist of the knife. And then he's brought to Caiaphas, and they got him to admit that, are you the Son of Man? Well, you say I am, blah, blah, blah. Yes. Which, okay, blasphemy. So he kicks him over to Pontius Pilate, we got to get this guy killed, and we don't have the authority. The Romans do it, so crucify him. Pilate doesn't want to do it. Pilate ships him over to Herod Antipas, because he's the tetrarch of Galilee where Jesus is from. Here, you do it. Herod doesn't want to do it either. So Herod kicks it back to Pilate. And Pilate tries to, then there's this scene where so here's the deal. Okay, so Pilate goes, there's a crowd that's gathered, and since it's Passover, there's a tradition that one person can be released from prison. So Pilate wants very much to release Jesus. Okay, so here, I'll release Jesus. But the crowd says, no, release Barabbas, crucify Jesus. Now I want to ask you a question. Is it logical that the same crowd who welcomed Jesus as their Messiah a few days before, who loved him, who followed him, would have said crucify him and let a thief, a bandit, Barabbas loose? It doesn't make any sense. No, the probability is vast that the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees, brought in the crowd who would, of course, rule in their favor and say, no, crucify Jesus. But ever thereafter, wrongly, the Jews who loved Jesus and the early followers who were all Jews, they were blamed. And you have that horrible beginning of anti-Semitism. So finally, he doesn't want to, but Pontius Pilate, who in one gospel washes his hands, saying, hey, it isn't my deal. He also has a plaque put up, Jesus, the King of the Jews. Because there's a magnificent scene in John's Gospel, the 19th chapter, this exchange between Jesus and Pilate. Pilate really must have liked Jesus. Are you a king? He asked. And Jesus is not of this world. I'm here to testify to the truth. And Pilate says, truth? What is truth? Wow, we can still ask that today. Anyway, then Pilate realizes, they're going to crucify you. You know, I don't want this. Are you aware of what's going to happen? And Jesus makes the comment in John's Gospel, listen, you have no power over me. It's only what the Father gives you. This has to be. Let it be. Wow. And so he's crucified. Now picture this as we get to the end. Just picture this with me. Imagine, if you will, a crowd of the people now at Golgotha, the place of the skull, where just outside the city walls where they crucified Jesus and two thieves. Just imagine. So many of them believed he was the Messiah. And if it's true, then he can't die. You got it? So they're going out there, hopefully to see God be pushed to finally have to save his son, to have to save the Messiah, the son of David, the son of man, by bringing in the army of angels and bringing about the end of the Roman occupation. Can you imagine how it felt? Can you imagine that kind of excitement and hope and fear? And then when Jesus died, can you hear the collective groan? Ah, he's not the one. He's not the one. He didn't fulfill the promises of the Hebrew Bible about being the son of David and a political figure or the son of man. In fact, he talked about in his lifetime the son of man coming yet. And so the early belief in the church was that Jesus would shortly come back as the son of man. It was very painful. And there's not time for me to go through the last seven words of Jesus there on the cross. But in a nutshell, there was another stream of prophecy that Jesus understood referred to him, and that was from Isaiah 53, the suffering servant who would die for the people, who would take the sins of the people upon his own shoulders so that the people could be forgiven and have a new life with God. And so what that whole week was about, my friends, was really the transformation of a Jewish prophet into a cosmic figure, Jesus Christ, rejoining in the Trinity. And I want to say more about the crucifixion, the resurrection, and why it is absolutely essential that there was a resurrection. There had to have been something big or there never would be a church, and you and I would not be having this conversation. I'm afraid I'm pretty much at the end of my time. It's a magnificent story. Read it. And if you'd like to hear this again, I will have it on my website, drhalgreen.com, drhalgreen.com, later today. And if you'd like to write me, if you have any questions, anything you'd like me to talk about, write me at drhalgreen, drhalgreen, at gmail.com. Have a blessed week.
This is your home in the country, KWPC, K23 6CF, Muscatine.